The following shiur has been presented by Rav Yitzchak Grossman, Dayan at the Beis Havad, and has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. This volume has been graciously dedicated by Mr. and Mrs. Barry Cohn of Los Angeles, California, in memory of their esteemed brother, Rav Menachem Mendel ben Rav Yosef Yitzchak Isaac Cohn Zatzal, Baal Mechaber Sefer Ateres Avi. May the Torah studied through this volume be an everlasting zechus for his neshama.
Be'ah Daf Lamed Tes, our previous lecture, Daf Lamed Ches, on the Gemara of Varer Tzror Migarno Shel Chavero, we discussed a major machlok sachronim about someone who kills the cow of another. The cow subsequently, upon a forensic autopsy, turned out to be a trefa. Do we say, since in hindsight the cow was worth nothing or very little, the mazik is not chayev, he's only chayev for the value of a cow that's a trefa? Or do we say that no, since at the time the cow was believed to be good and could have been sold, had a presumed value of a healthy cow, the mazik is chayev for the full value of the cow? The Nesivos and the Drisha, discussing Hezek and Arvus, say that we look at the true value of the cow, and he does not pay the full value of a healthy cow, while many other achronim, the Marsham, the Imrebina, the Bachacher, and his Kesef Kedoshim and Das Kedoshim, his student, the Gedulei Hektish, the Chalkes Yoav, all say that no, if the cow had a market value of a healthy cow, then the Mazik is Chayev for that full value. In this follow-up lecture, although it has nothing to do with Daf Lamed Tes, we consider further perspectives on this basic question of whether halacha assigns the value of an asset based on its true value, given perfect knowledge, or simply how much it would be sold for on the market, given the imperfect knowledge, the lack of information that we typically have. Do we say, since intrinsically something is worth nothing, then someone who's mazik it doesn't pay anything? Or do we say no, since at the time this is all we know, then it has a value of whatever the market pays for it, and that's how much the mazik pays, along with various other nafkaminas. So we begin with a Gemara in Makkos, Mishnah in Makkos actually. The Mishnah says, "Me'idin anu et ish ploni, daf gimel, shegirish es ishto." Edim say Reuven divorced his wife and he hasn't paid her ksuva, and then they're found to be zomim. So they don't have to pay him the full value of the ksuva, because he anyway might wind up divorcing her. Who knows what tomorrow will bring? So the Mishnah says, you're right, they don't pay the full value of the ksuva. Omdin kamadim rotu litein. We make a shuma of the value of a ksuva, given our uncertainty about the ultimate destiny of the marriage. The Gemara and Rashi have various different shitas, exactly how you make the calculation, but roughly speaking, for our purposes, it is sufficient to understand that the ksuva is valued not at its face value, its nominal value, but at how much the market would pay for a ksuva, factoring in the uncertainty about how the marriage will end. The Erech Shai, on the Nesivos, asks him this Mishnah. He says, the Nesivos says, if the cow turns out to be a trefa and worthless, or almost worthless, the mazik pays nothing, so why do the Gedim Zomim have to pay anything? They're certainly not going to pay the full ksuva that the Mishnah says. So they pay, let's say, half, 100 or 90, based on the suffix. Why should they pay even that? If it turns out that he winds up divorcing his wife tomorrow, then they weren't really knocking him anything. So why should the Edom Zomim pay an estimated value? They should pay the true value, and the true value of their hezek was very little. What's the difference? So the Erech Shai says, Edom Zomim is a special case. In general, halacha values an asset at the true value, not the market value, and if the true value is zero, if the true hezek is zero, the mazik would pay nothing. However, Edom Zomim is special. He brings a Migdal Oz that says that Edom Zomim, the Tala Rachmana, Dinad Machshavtan, their malicious intent, Kashar Zomim, Edom Zomim is different from all other torts, all other Nezikin. They pay based on what they intended to do, and Vahare Zomol of Ra, they tried to harm him. So this is an exception, basically. Edom Zomim is the exception that proves the rule, the general rule that the Nesivos is correct, that an asset is valued at its true value based on perfect knowledge. Edom Zomim is a special case. The truth is, we can give perhaps a more elegant and more intuitive answer to the Erech Shai's question by distinguishing between a case where we have imperfect knowledge, but current knowledge. The current status of the asset, like the case of Trefa, really is a Trefa right now. We just don't know that. That's where the Nesivos says that the true value is really zero, and therefore the Mazik pays zero. But in the case of Ksuva, Right now, we don't know what will happen tomorrow. It hasn't happened yet. It's still in the future. It's not settled yet. So that's why we don't say the truth is the marriage, he would have been divorced tomorrow. That's tomorrow. That hasn't occurred today. So in that case, we use the market value rather than the true value, similar to the distinction the Poskim make in Hilchos Shabbos and Yerideya between Psik Reisha and Safek Psik Reisha, whether the unknown is facts that are already true or the unknown is based on future events. But that lechara would be a very straightforward chiluk. And indeed, the Sefer Chemdas Moshe from Moshe Perlmutter makes this chiluk, not to answer this question of Erech Shai. He makes it in general. He has a long tshuva arguing that in general halacha looks at the market value given our imperfect information of an asset. He brings in the Sivas, who says that no, that we look at the true value based on perfect information. And he distinguishes between a case where the information we lack is about the current Matthias or about facts and events that will occur tomorrow. He brings in Merit Al-Ghazi, among other things. Merit Al-Ghazi is discussing someone who is mazik a Bukhar tam. A Bukhar has no mum, bizman azeh, can't do anything with it. You just have to take care of it and wait till it gets a mum. Hopefully you'll get a mum, at which point you can treat it more or less like chulin and eat it. So if someone is mazik a Bukhar tam, what's the halacha? Merit Al-Ghazi explains, complicated analysis, based on Rishonim and the Sugya. Merit Al-Ghazi explains that you pay the amount that the market would pay for such a Bukhar, based on the actuarial calculations, when is it likely to get a mum, how much trouble is it to take care of it until then. Based on that, that's how much you pay for the Bukhar tam. And that's the Chemdas Moshe's general rule, that in general he says, like all the other Acharim who are Chalik on the Nesivas, halacha values an asset at its market value, not at its true value given absolutely perfect information. What about the Nesivas, he says? He makes this chiluk. The Nesivas was talking about a case where the information that we're ignorant of is already about the world as it is today. It already is a treifa. We just don't know that. That's why the Nesiva says that you're not chai when you're mazik a behemoth that turned out to be a treifa. But a bechor that gets a mum tomorrow, right now the market would give something for it, even if it winds up never getting a mum and it turns out it's worthless. But since right now we don't know that yet, right now the value of the behemoth is what the market would pay for it. And according to this distinction, we can also resolve the Erech Shai's question for Makkos. In the case of Makkos, we don't know how the marriage will end, and even if it's true that he'll wind up divorcing her in 24 hours, right now we don't know that. So right now, the hezek to him can still be calculated, we can put a value on it. It's true, in hindsight, maybe he'll divorce her tomorrow, and therefore the eidim won't really have hurt him. Since we don't know that, though, we use instead the market's calculation of the value, and therefore we charge the eidim zomen as a mazik. Moving on, discussing the values of ksuva, we turn to another facet of this fundamental question of whether halacha looks at value based on idealized perfect information or based on information that the market has. Another example of ksuva. Gemara Bava Kamma talks about the converse case of the Mishnah in Makkos. The Mishnah in Makkos was talking about the Eidim Zomen, who turned out to be Zomen, had testified against the husband by saying that he owed his wife a ksuva. In the Gemara in Makkos, the Gemara in Bava Kamma talks about the reverse case. The Eidim Zomen were made in favor of the husband by testifying that he divorced his wife and already paid the ksuva, so he's off the hook. And they would have cost her a ksuva. She never would have gotten the ksuva. And then it turns out that they're zomen, so she's still married. So they tried to wrong her. They tried to say that she had forfeited her ksuva. She had already received it and was no longer entitled to it. And really, she still is. So how much do the Eidim Zomen pay her? So again, the Gemara in Makkos brings essentially the same rule. Ein omrim yishalmu kol ksuvasa. We don't say make them pay her the whole ksuva, because maybe she would never have gotten the ksuva. Maybe they would have stayed married. Maybe she would have predeceased him, and she never would have received the ksuva. How much do they pay? Again, tovas hana. They pay tovas hana, which again is the amount the market prices her ksuva at. Omdin kamadim rokelitim ksuva shalzu. How much would the market pay for a ksuva? Based on the various possibilities of divorce, death, her predeceasing him, him predeceasing her. The Gemara Bava Kamma goes on in Achovel. The Gemara says, Abaya says, Tavas Hana L'Isha Hava. It must be that if the Isha would actually sell her ksuva b'Tavas Hana, instead of someone, Eidim Zomen, nothing to do with Eidim, she would just sell her ksuva on the market that they can receive it in the case where she gets a get or he predeceases her. So what happens to the money she receives for selling it? It must be, Abaya says, that she keeps it. The Isha L'Kadaitach L'Baal Havya, if the husband would have right to that money, then why would Eidim Zomen owe her anything? The Eidim Zomen could say, we shouldn't be chayav pay you anything. We didn't cause you any harm. Even had you sold the ksuva, the husband would have gotten the cash. So you had no value in the ksuva. You couldn't sell the ksuva and raise money off it because the husband would seize that money. So So therefore, we should not be chayav anything to you. Rav Shalman said, Mishum Zikar Vach Besa, that no, even in the case where the husband gets the money, she still benefits, because it's good for a woman that her husband has money, because there's more money for the household. We're focusing on Abaye. Abaye says that if the husband grabs all the money that she receives from selling her ksuva, and she has no benefit from the ksuva, then Abaye says that Edom Zomim would owe her nothing. The Nesivus, a famous celebrated Nesivus, has a kash on this Gemara. He says, why do we care that she couldn't sell the ksuva, she couldn't raise any money off the ksuva, the Baal would grab it, and therefore the Edom Zomim would be off the hook? He says, why? Why can't the woman say, just like if I would sell the ksuva, people would pay money for it, the market puts a value on a ksuva, so that has value to me too. To me it's valuable, even if I can't sell it practically, because my husband will just seize the proceeds, but whatever value the market puts on it, I have that value in my ksuva, and they were mazik me, even if it's not something I could sell. So why can't I charge the Edom Zomim for that? The Sivas establishes, therefore, based on this and a number of other arguments, a major chiddush lahalacha. Any item, any asset, any right that a person has, which is only valuable to him or her, but has no value to the general public, it can't be sold, it has no value on the open market, is not considered mamon, and if someone is mazik it, he does not have to pay. The Sivas is talking about a case of someone who has an easement, a right of way through someone else's property, and he can't sell it. It has no value to anybody else, and someone is mazik that easement, so they don't have to pay. The Sivas asks, why not? It's clearly worth something. I would pay a lot of money to have this easement. It helps me utilize my own property very much, and it's clearly worth a lot of money to me. The Sivas says, the principle is, based on this Gemara in Bava Kamma, that's telling the Ksuva and other Gemaras, even something which is clearly worth a lot of money to me, if it's not something that can be publicly sold and traded and is worth something to the general public, it's not considered mamon, and someone who's mazikid is not chayev. Many other acharonim disagree, debate this. One of them is the Erech Shai. Another Erech Shai. The Erech Shai says, Zarhu etzli. This sounds bizarre, very non-intuitive. Just because I can't charge for it, a mazik shouldn't have to pay. Why? Mikol makom azke. I clearly suffered a loss. And now I have to buy a new easement. So clearly it's worth money. What about the Nesivus' Raya from Bava Kamma? So the Erech Shai says, there's no Raya from there. Because, and now he brings us back to our first question. He says, really, a ksuva may be worth nothing. If the Isha predeceases her husband, the ksuva is worth nothing. So really, intrinsically, the ksuva is worth zero. The only thing that gives the ksuva any money is the fact that she can sell it. Either as the Erech Shai said, Edom Zomim works with a special calculation, or because of the Shemzeth Moshe Svara, Perlmutter Svara, that since it's in the future, it gives value. But the value, he says, is not determined based on the intrinsic value of the ksuva, because that might be worth zero. The value of a ksuva is only based on the fact that I can sell it. And if I can't sell it, then it's really worth nothing. But that's the only ksuva, which may have no intrinsic value, which may actually be worth zero, if she predeceases him. However, other assets like the easement, which, independent of market value, are clearly worth something right now. There's no lack of information. We know exactly the entire situation, and it's clearly a valuable right. That's certainly worth something, and that's certainly something where a mazik has to pay for. This rule of the Gemara Bava Kamma that it depends on saleability is only something which intrinsically may be worth nothing. Then the only thing that imputes value to it is the ability to sell it. The Evan Shisia brings this question, and he thinks this question is a mistake. He thinks the Nesivus is absolutely right. He was talking about a case of someone was a shomer, a beili, on someone else's passport, and the shomer lost the passport negligently. So if it were a normal asset, you would certainly be chayev. The question is a passport considered money? Are you chayev for it? Now clearly we can assign value to a passport. It costs money to get one. So do we hold the shomer chayev for the passport? The Evan Shisia says no. Based on this Nesivus, since a passport can't be sold, it has no market value. Maybe in the criminal underworld it does, but certainly in general a passport has no market value. So then we have the Nesivus' rule, that anything which has value uniquely to the holder but has no general value on the open market is not considered money, and a mazik or a shomer who's pasheya, who's negligent, is not chayev. And he says the Nesivus is correct. What about the Nesivus' raya from the Gemara Bava Kamma and Erech Shai's refutation of the raya? He says, no, he says, Erech Shai's refutation doesn't hold water, he says. The Gemara in Bava Kamma says that if you can sell the ksuva because the husband seizes the proceeds, it's worth nothing. So the Erech Shai says, that's because the ksuva is intrinsically worth nothing. Says Evan Shisiyah, so what? Even though the ksuva may intrinsically be worth nothing, but the Isha herself can still put a price tag on how much it's worth to her to have it. Even if it's true, it may turn out in the fullness of time that she never gets anything from it. But the same way the market puts a value on it, so even if she can't sell it because the husband will seize the proceeds, she herself values it. She herself, she could consult an actuary, consult an economist, and they'll tell her, based on present discounted value of money and the actuarial tables for who's likely to die, they can do the calculation and say, this tshuva, it's true, it may be worth zero eventually, but right now, we would advise you to pay this much money for the tshuva. She might be willing to pay the edim not to testify against her, because the tshuva is worth a lot of money to her. So that's what the nesivos means, he says. That good, she can't sell it to anybody else because the husband will confiscate the money. And good, it may turn out that she herself will derive no benefit from it because she may predecease him. But so what? If we don't accept the nesivos' yisod that an asset which is worth something only to me is not considered mamon in halacha, she herself can put a price tag on the ksuva. If the ksuva is worth masayim zuz, maybe to her it's worth 75 zuz today. And that itself should be worth money, in spite of the fact that in hindsight it might be worth nothing, but today it's worth $75 to her. The same way someone else on the open market would give her 75, to her herself it's worth 75. And the only reason we don't take into account that $75 is because that $75 is worth something only to her. She can't actually realize it on the market because the husband will confiscate it. And that's a riot to the nesivos, that value which is exclusive to me is not, value is exclusive to me doesn't count. That's why her value of $75 doesn't count. So the general market value doesn't count because the husband confiscates it, and the value to her doesn't count because that's unique to her. So in any event, this is what the Gemara says, that if she can't sell it, then it is not considered mamon in halacha. We have several explanations in the Achronim how to interpret this. The Nesivos and the Meshesiyah say because it's worth something only to her, and the Erech Shai says this is a special case in Ksuva because Ksuva itself is intrinsically worthless, and it's only because she can sell it, and since she can't sell it practically because the husband will take all the money, it's not worth anything to her. The Minchas Shlomo also sides with the Nesivos, explains the Nesivos, but Rav Shlomo Zalman adds one twist. He says the Nesivos certainly agrees that a real asset, for example, he says a shtar, a get, if someone tears up my get, he says, that I, the husband, wrote and I'm ready to give to my wife, then he will have to pay. He says, because even though it's true, nobody else will pay for my get, but the get costs money to produce, there's a clear objective cost to the get, and I can charge for that. I can charge a magic for that. Rick Vager actually also says this. Rick Vager and Achuva suggest, is inclined to the view that if someone damages or is responsible for negligently losing someone else's get before it's given, he's chayav to pay for it. The Nesiva says the Minchas Shlomo is only talking about something which is not really a real asset. Like it's only a schus, he calls it, it's only an easement, it's not an actual tangible asset. That's where the Nesiva says that if it's only worth something to me, it's not considered money. That's sounding Marim Bava Kama, he says. Really, fundamentally, as we've been discussing, if someone is mazik someone's ksuva, Edim Zoman, Trotty Mazik ksuva, we should calculate the hezik by, let's wait to see what happens, let's wait to see who dies first. However, if there's a market value, then instead of saying, let's wait to see what happens, we just charge the mazik the market value. But if she can't sell it, because the husband will seize the money, then we revert to the, like the Erech Shai said, we revert to the basic point that the ksuva is worth nothing. But otherwise, he says, if she could sell it, then it's like a lottery ticket. A lottery ticket that can be bought and sold would, and if someone is mazik it before the drawing or before the results are known, he would be chayiv of the value of the ticket, as long as it can be sold. But if it can't be sold, a ticket which is non-transferable, he says, then you have the Nesivos' point that it's not considered mamon, and the mazik would not be chayav. But all this, Rav Shlomo Zalman explains, is only something which has no intrinsic value. It's not an actual asset. It's just a schus to get money, a right, an easement, something like that. That's where we apply this rule, that it's only if it has public value that the market puts on it, then the mazik is chayav, and if not, but an intrinsic asset like a shtar, something that costs money to produce, and is an actual item that I own, then you're chayav regardless of the fact that it wouldn't be worth anything to anybody else, and he therefore would presumably disagree with Evan Shasi about the passport. He would say, no, the passport, like the get, is something that costs money, clearly has an objective value, anybody would pay money to get a passport, and therefore, in that case, you'd be chayav, and the Sivis himself isn't talking about passports, he would say. The Sivis is talking about cases, assets that have no real inherent value, or only a schus to get something else. Then it depends on whether it has a market value, and that's what the Nesivos is proving from the Gemara in Bava Kama. So as we mentioned, Rav Shlomo Zalman talks about the lottery ticket and takes for granted that if someone is mazik someone else's lottery ticket, he is chayav to pay the value of the ticket, as long as the lottery ticket is transferable. If it isn't, then he would not be chayav. This question was actually first raised by Rabbi Yaakov Emden in the Shailos Yaivitz. Rabbi Yaakov Emden had a case. He was asked by someone else, a detailed case. Someone had lottery ticket. There was a commissiant, an agent perhaps of some sort, in Amsterdam. And the way the lottery works, he explains in great detail that there were three drawings or three phases. Anyone who wouldn't win the first drawing, he would have to pay additional money to refresh or renew his ticket. And then again, a third time for the third drawing. And there were deadlines. If you didn't renew the ticket by a certain date, you would lose the ticket. You would lose any value you had in it. So the commissioner, the agent, was either shachach or hazed. He either forgot or deliberately was careless and didn't renew the guy's ticket. Now the tickets were worthless, and the owner of the tickets lost whatever money he had sunk into the lottery tickets. Rabbi Yaakov Emden's discussion of the lottery is quite detailed, and the truth is Rabbi Yaakov Emden himself had spent time dabbling in lotteries. He recounts this in his Megillah Sefer. He describes playing lotteries, winning, losing, he says. He says once he invested only a little bit, he won 100 ducats, he said. He won smaller amounts. In other years, he never lost. In some years, he spent more than one rechtel, or he lost everything. So he himself had personal experience with the lottery. But in any event, he was asked this question: if someone is negligent and causes a loss of someone else's lottery ticket, is he chayev? He has a long tshuva, and he concludes that he is chayev, the pasheya or the mazik is chayev for damaging the ticket. Now the question is, how much do you have to pay? How do you value the ticket? So Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, even if it turns out in hindsight these tickets were not winning tickets, he explains, how do we know that? Because the tickets have individual numbers, and we verify these numbers did not win. Nevertheless, he says, if you were mazik the tickets, if you were negligent with regard to the tickets at a time where they had a market value, they could be bought and sold for a determinate price, so he says, then you have to pay that price. Ki yachal liton anar l'mizvan l'ubeina, I would have sold them. When we discussed the Nesivas and all that Akharim Ruachalik on the Nesivas, the Nesivas about someone who damages the cow, we mentioned that many Akharim ask on the Nesivas from the Gemara of Barer Tzrar, that the Tzrar itself, a rock inside Chitim, has value insofar as all the Chitim could be sold for 10 pounds of Chitim, which are really 9.5 pounds of Chitim and half a pound of rock, or whatever the maximum allowable proportion is, can be sold for 10 pounds, so that the rock has a value of Chitim. So the Akharim say, who was in the case of the cow? The cow could be sold as a healthy cow, even if it turns out in hindsight divin a trefa, so it has the value of the healthy cow. So at the time, we noted that the Ritva says that the only time you can bill for barer tzrar is if they were commercial chitim, they were going to be sold. But if they were a personal chitim that were planned to be eaten, you can't charge a guy anything for taking out the rock. On the contrary, he did you a favor. If anything, he purified your chitim. So we pointed out that it's not so obvious why all the Akharim compare the case of the cow to barer tzrar. It should depend on whether the cow is a cow which is omed l'mechira, you plan to sell it, or a cow that you plan to use yourself. A cow that you plan to use yourself, since it was a trefa and wouldn't have lasted long anyway, then Siva should be right, or at least Akharim should have no kasha from Barer Tzrar. So here, Rabbi Yaakov Emden touches on this point. He says, the guy who had the lottery ticket, in hindsight, it was worthless. He would have lost. But he could say, I would have sold it. Then Rabbi Yaakov Emden, without mentioning the Ritva, acknowledges, well, maybe he wouldn't have sold it. Afilu tema duhu gavra dlo avidel zvuni l'nafsha. Even if he's not a person who buys, he's not a dealer, he buys tickets only to play a flutter on the lottery himself. And he concedes our point, therefore, that such a person, perhaps, we should not use the market value, we should use the true value, which turned out to be zero. Now, Rav Yaakov Emden has a new svara, mati amar, lasa d'haf gavra mazle garam. The reason these tickets didn't win is because I didn't own them. Like the story of the Shpal Yezeda, Had I kept the ticket, I would have won. Il mole hayu shalo, shema hayu olam b'tzchar. Had I kept the tickets, I would have won. So he seems to concede that in general, we might look at the question of whether you were going to sell them or keep them. But with lottery tickets, you could say, mazle garam. That's as far as the Gemara itself employs in all kinds of contexts. Complicated sugya, when you say it, when you don't. Rabbi Yaakov Emden, without any raya, just says that in Arash Shaila, if you want to know how to value a lottery ticket, you can say, mazle garam, that had I held the ticket, I would have won. Another interesting question raised by Rabbi Yaakov Emden is, so I owe you the ticket. I have to pay you the value of a ticket. Can I just give you a different ticket? A ticket with different numbers. They're all the same. Or do you say that, no, some people play their lucky numbers, their birthday, their anniversary. Some people want to ask for these numbers. I want that ticket or its value. I don't want a different ticket. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, even though there are people who have such considerations, superstitious or otherwise, Mistavra Dlav Kpeda, he says, it's not a Kpeda, perhaps because there's no reason to be machped, he says, and therefore, la feida, I could give you an equivalent ticket. So that's Rabbi Yaakov Emden Shita, like Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, that a lottery ticket which can be transferred, again, Rabbi Yaakov Emden bases it on the fact that you can sell it, then he has another svara that you could say I would have won, but he also says the first svara that I could have sold it, at least if it's from a gavra, David Lemegar, if I'm someone who sells tickets, David Lezvune, then I can charge you, even though it turned out in hindsight it was worthless, but I could have sold it. So it has a value, like Rav Shlomo Zalman, who says that at least in the case where the tickets are sellable, are transferable, and someone is mazik them, he is chayev. Is there a dissenting view? Not entirely clear. There's a tshuva in the Beit Shlomo. He's not talking about mazik. He's talking about a case, Reuven bought a lottery ticket for 10 sel, some kind of currency. Shimon gave him 5, they agreed to go halves in the ticket. Shimon gave him 5 of the sel, they agreed to be partners. Turned out the ticket won. And then Reuven decided to renege on his commitment and said, no, I'm keeping all the winnings, it's my ticket. So the Beit Shlomo has a tshuva discussing whether it was a valid kinyan or not. And then he says, even if there would be some kind of kinyan, or at least a mishapara, it's not really relevant here. Here, he says, Mikra Din, Reuven is correct. Reuven wins. Why? He says, because it depends in lamdus, legalistically, how we view the obligation of a lottery to pay out winnings. If we say that the chiyuv is me'achshav, whoever produces the winning numbers, whoever gets numbers win, then it's like a regular star, like a ksuva, which you can buy, you can sell, and then maybe Shimon would have a kinyan in the ticket. He says, however, mi yodea, who says that's how it works? He says, perhaps, Shema, he doesn't really know, he says, not sure how you figure something like this out, but he says, perhaps, the way the lottery works is that as soon as the number is drawn, when the number is drawn, only at that point does the lottery operator become obligated to pay out winnings. But until then, there's no chiyuv at all. So if there's no chiyuv, he says, what are you selling? There is nothing now. It's only a possibility that tomorrow maybe a chiyuv will be created. There's nothing to sell. It's not like ksuva, he says. Ksuva, even though the Gemara always says, well, in the ksuva ligvas mechayim, ksuva is not payable until death. Nevertheless, the poskim explained, the shibud is chal now, and the chasra meshubadim. But here he says there is no chiyuv whatsoever until the drawing occurs, and therefore there's nothing to sell. He's not sure about this. Eini machlut legamri. I'm not absolutely certain. Mikal makam, he says, I think this is the correct halacha, and even though he says roi lefasher b'neim, you should make some kind of pshara, but the pshara should incline toward Reuven, toward the seller. Even though Reuven seems to have behaved quite badly, he certainly would have charged Reuven, Shimon had the ticket lost, he certainly would have made him pay his 5 tzel. Now that he's winning, it seems very unfair. Nevertheless, Beit Shlomo says that the Ikra Din is toward Reuven, that's his inclination, and therefore you should make a pshara, but Reuven is the primary one who the Din favors in this case. Now, the Tarsha Shoham, from Moshe Perlmutter again, that's how I got to his other sefer, Chemdas Moshe, right, Perlmutter says, he brings a Beit Shlomo, and he says, according to him, it would also follow that if someone destroyed someone's lottery ticket, he burned it, if he was Sarif lottery tzatzel shel chaver, he should be potter. Not like Rabbi Yaakov Emden. It's not like Sarif Shtar, because Sarif Shtar, the Gemara says, you burn somebody Shtar Chov, you're chayev, because the Chov exists. But according to the Beit Shlomo, if the Chov does not exist, then there would be no chiyuv for burning the ticket. So Rabbi Perlmutter assumes that Rabbi Shlomo, or Shlomo Drimmer, descends from Rabbi Yaakov Emden and says that no, destroying a lottery ticket, you're not chayef for it. Right now there's no chiyuv, and there's no money in the world yet at all, so you're not chayef for destroying the ticket. Not sure if he means you're not chayef even if it turns out to win, or you're not chayef if it loses, or it makes no difference, but he says you're not chayef, you're certainly not chayef the going rate for a lottery ticket, because right now, Beit Shlomo, he says, looks at the ticket as being currently not something worth anything. We only start talking about money when the winnings are paid out. Right now, there's no money. There's nothing to buy. There's nothing to sell. And according to Perlmutter, the Beit Shlomo holds, there's nothing to be mazik either. There's no moment to be mazik, so you're not chayav. The Tarsha Shoham, Perlmutter says, I personally disagree. He says, you're not selling the revenue stream from tomorrow, which doesn't exist today. He says, then the Beit Shlomo would be right, but you're not doing that. He says, etzim hanumer, the number itself, the ticket itself that you're selling today, it has shavius. As I explained, he says, in his other tshuva, in his Chemdash Moshe, anything that has a market value, at least where the market value is dependent on future events, as we discussed earlier, has value, and therefore you would be chayef for being mazikah, like Rabbi Yaakov Emden, and therefore you could buy it and you could sell it. Beit Shlomo, he says, is wrong about kinyan. There would be kinyan, there would be mishapara, and you'd be chayef for being mazikah. And then he says, he saw the Rabbi Yaakov Emden who says this also. So we have Rav Shlomo Zalman, Rabbi Yaakov Emden, and Rabbi Perlmutter, who all say that if you're mazik a lottery ticket, you are chayev, at least if the lottery ticket is transferable, you're chayev for the going rate of lottery tickets. And the one possible exception is the Beit Shlomo, who at least is understood by Rabbi Perlmutter, says that you are not chayev, it's not considered money, insofar as the obligation of the operator to pay hasn't been chal yet, doesn't come into existence till tomorrow, the ticket itself is not considered money, and therefore you would not be chayev if you're mazikid, according to the Beis Shlomo, as understood by Rabbi Perlmutter. One last case discussed by the Poskim, where again hinges on the same fundamental question, or conceptually a very similar question, about whether we calculate hezek and we calculate chashon mishpar halachas based on the value the market assigns actuarially, or based on perfect, theoretically perfect information. This is an intriguing case. It's kind of the reverse case. Up till now, we were talking about cases where Yuvade made a maisa hezek, and the question is, did he really have any value in the asset before you were mazik it or not? Now we discuss the reverse case. Shulchan Aruch, based on a Mishnah, Gemara, talks about a case where Reuven's animal fell, tripped, and it fell into someone's vegetable garden, and it would have gotten badly hurt, or suffered, or even been injured, except the vegetables cushioned its fall. Unfortunately for the vegetables and for their owner, the vegetables got squashed and damaged due to the heavy cow that landed on them. So the Gemara discusses the chiyuv of Nana. We're not talking about Mazin, we're talking about Nana perhaps, but Nana. Is there a chiyuv of Nana? Your animal was Nana. It was saved from getting hurt by falling on top of the vegetables. So are you chayiv or not? So the halacha is, if the Shulchan Aruch paskins, if it saved the animal from being injured, Mishal and Mashin Nanas, Mahana Yeshla Bechavata, Hari Makta Makam Rach, when it's Raskweva Rao. It found a soft place and didn't get injured. Marshal and Yamshel Shlomo has a lengthy discussion going back and forth on the question of, based on the Yukim of the language of the Rishonim, if it wouldn't have gotten injured, it just would have been hurt, it would have suffered. Do you pay for that or not? It's a complicated discussion, and his basic conclusion is, if that was the only thing the animal was saved from, you do not have to pay. But if it was saved from getting damaged, then, or at least from possibly getting damaged, then he says you make an actuarial calculation, how much would the owner have paid, given that we're not sure if it would have gotten damaged, how much would you pay to have it land on vegetables and be safe rather than land on the hard ground and maybe get injured? Make a calculation, how much is that worth to you? You pay that, and when you make that calculation, you also take into account how much would you pay for the animal not to be injured. If there was no possibility of damage to the animal at all, lasting damage, just suffering, then you don't pay for that by itself. Vice versa, if the animal definitely would have gotten injured, then you simply calculate the value of the injury, and you don't add into it the value of suffering. But if you're making an actuarial calculation, it may get injured, how much would you pay for the security of it certainly not getting injured against the possibility of maybe getting injured, and you have to calculate that actuarially, then we also throw in the question of the behemoth not suffering. I have no idea what the svara for this is, why we take into account the behemoth suffering if and only if you're making actuarial calculations. But for our purposes, forget the question of suffering. We're focused on the basic actuarial question. Do you pay for the animal that might have gotten injured but might not have? The answer is, the Amshel Shlomo says, yes. Even though we don't know if it would have gotten injured had it fallen on the ground, it might have been safe either way. Nevertheless, since if you ask the guy up front, your behemoth is about to fall, it may get injured, how much would you pay for insurance that the behemoth will vada be safe? He'll say, well, the damage might be $50. 50% chance, I'll give you $25. That's how much you have to pay the owner of the vegetables for giving you that insurance that is actuarially worth $25. Shach takes the same view. The Shach says, for tzar you don't pay. He says, Avali yesh l'safek bazeh, tzar l'shalom asher yenotin sheyatzil behemtem yisafek. If there's a safek that it would get damaged, then you have to pay how much a person would pay ala safek to escape that safek and have definite security. And he throws it to the Amshel Shlomo. So the Shach and the Amshel Shlomo both say, the Shach and the Marshal both hold that we don't take into account perfect knowledge, we take into account what you actually knew, what was actually knowable in advance. Derech Shai says, I'm not sure why. He says the Drisha and the Nesivus, they're the ones who say he, throughout all three Erech Shais, seems to accept the Nesivus, unlike all the other Akronim, the Bachacher and the Marsham and the Rabina and the Gedulei Hektish, and the Chalkas Yov, who all are not sure if the Nesivus was correct, Erech Shai seems to like the Nesivus. He says the Nesivus says that when it comes to Hezek, when you damage a cow that was turned out to be a trefa, the Drisha and the Nesivus say that we don't say how much was the cow worth on the open market. We say, given perfect knowledge, given theoretical, absolutely correct knowledge about the state of the cow, how much is it worth? That's how much you pay when you're mazikit, meaning nothing or very little. So to here, the Erech Shai says in reverse. We don't say, well, I don't know if my cow will be injured, therefore it was worth $25 to me not to be injured. We say, well, maybe the cow wouldn't have been injured at all, and therefore maybe I'm not chayav at all. Then we don't know, so it's a suffix. But me suffix, we say, well, it's a raya. And therefore, since it's only a suffix, you don't say pay $25. We say the amount I owe you depends on whether or not it would have actually been damaged or not. We look at theoretical perfect knowledge, not knowledge that was actually available. And therefore, you can. Therefore, he says they would, the drisha and the nesivus, I guess, also would be chalik on the shach and the marshal. I would say you don't pay the actuarial calculation. You pay only the amount that you actually were saved, which would be a suffix whether it was 50 or nothing. And l'chara the din is therefore you would pay nothing because hamotz nechavero alav haraya.
The Daf Yomi Halacha series has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. To sign up for the Halacha Center's weekly interactive e-journal, please email subscribe to info@thehalachacenter.org.